I'm gonna have to leave my thumb drive here. Oh, I need it later.
From Macquarie University, Debbie Richards from our School of Computing, talk about some work in problem-based learning.
Now let me just explain. Now just because I come from the Department of Computing, you're going to say, well, that's easy for them. It doesn't. Of course they're using IT and that's what everyone's doing and so there's no problems there. But that's not true. So if you were dissuaded from thinking, well, if you're good at research, you're good at teaching, which I probably didn't need to, you probably didn't need to be dissuaded about. Also, don't think because you're teaching computing that you're using lots of particularly cutting-edge technology in your teaching. Again, you know, if you're not trained in teaching and not trained in how technology can be used in teaching, then you're probably not using it. So yes, we put our PowerPoint slides online as well. Okay, we tend to do some automatic marking of certain things, which may not more typically be done, and that has effectively come round to bite us, because when I started here in 99, we had in first year students 800, 1,000 students, 400 in second year, 200 in third year. We now have 400 in first year, up to 200 in second year, and if we're lucky, 100 in third year, okay, because the dot-com bust really hit us. Our enrolments are just starting to go up again, but a long way off the 40% loss of students. And so when we had those large numbers, we came up with all these sorts of strategies of how not to spend too much time with our students, because we had too many of them, how to automate lots of different things. I was criticised for spending too much time with the students, which did cost me a lot of time. Thankfully, that's, you know, now a benefit that I'm already in that practice, but it is something we're having to undo. So you've got to be a bit careful, obviously, with how you use technology. Let me give you the motivation, which follows on very nicely from what Leanne said. We do have a diversity of students. So one of the problems that we have nowadays is that at university we have to teach our students. That problem didn't necessarily exist so much in the past. And that may be your experience to some extent, you know, when you went through university, that you had your 3 hours of lectures a week. You know, if your background is more education, it may be different, but certainly in the sciences and I think in a number of fields, that was sort of the way. You work it out for yourself. You listen to that lecture, you read the material, you do the work, but if you essentially have to work it out for yourself. But nowadays, many of our students aren't willing to do that, or they're not really capable of doing that. So we need to teach them. So that's one of the big issues with some of the older lecturers that are around, that it is hard to understand, well, what's changed? And we do have different students now with different requirements and, well, they're more empowered and whatever. I'm not saying that is a bad thing. Often I, on the quiet, say, complain to the students, complain, because it's hard for me to change my peers as well. You complain, you can do a lot more, particularly if a few of you say we're not happy with the amount of feedback or whatever that we got, and force that change upon us. Now, this is the party line of the motivation, okay? As Leanne pointed out, change happens when it must happen. And so the motivation for what I'll take you through is because last year in a particular unit that I was convening, we should have had 40 to 50% failure rate, okay, because the students didn't know what they needed to know by the end of it. They hadn't achieved the learning outcomes. But there were a number of factors involved in that. And so more students went through, and I get them again at third year in their projects, and so I did a lot of revision with them this year to make up for that. And we said, hey, we've got to take charge of this and change this. The students are not working it out for themselves. We're not providing them with a technique, opportunities, forcing them, whatever it is, to really engage with the material and understand it. So they were trying to essentially memorise the textbook, and there's no way. So this particular unit is a second year unit, requirements analysis and design. Now, probably no one else here is directly in IT. We're teaching IT, but you'll be familiar with requirements. You know, what does the system need to do? So you may have collected requirements for a whole lot of different things, not necessarily a computer system. And that does involve talking to people, working out what are their needs, these sorts of things. So that's what they need to do. And then they have to model the problem domain, which we use something called unified modelling language, but it doesn't matter, we draw pictures. And then once we understand the problem by discussing it together around these pictures, we then turn that into a design. How are we going to solve that problem using the computer? So that's basically what the students have to do. They don't implement it in the semester. It's not project-based. There isn't a particular problem they're given. In fact, one of the learning outcomes is that essentially we should be able to throw any problem at you, and you will be able to learn how to elicit the requirements to that problem, model that problem, and then come up with a solution and model that solution. And of course, what we mean there by modelling is a way of testing it out before you go and implementing it. So it's not just drawing pictures of it, it's actually working out whether you got your design is going to be successful or not. So what we really needed was for students to go really through this process that is afforded by problem-based learning, where you get given a problem and you're motivated, you're forced to engage with what the theory is. But the issue is, down the bottom, this takes time. I've got and other resources. I'm not sure whether motivation is a resource. So definitely, as part of that, you've got people and textbooks and various different... And time, we know our students are very time poor. But motivation is certainly there. I'm not sure whether people think motivation is a resource, but it certainly makes a difference. So what we're trying to do, so in the ideal problem-based learning world, you would actually give someone a problem, and through trying to solve that, they would learn about the theory. And in that way, they'd understand when it's appropriate to apply. Well, again, we don't have the time, our students don't have the time. And one of the features of problem-based learning designs, I don't know if people have tried turning around their material so that it is taught in that way, but in general you can only teach them a smaller percentage to what you had to teach them before, because if you have to come to that conclusion, rather than telling them the conclusion, it takes them longer. Of course, you know, if you set an exam and the pass mark's 50%, they only know half of what they're supposed to know. So in the end, if they know 70%, of 70%, you know, it's probably just as good anyway. Or 100% or 50% is the same, but they actually know it, and you know what they know the next year. The problem is when units are used as prerequisites, and the next year were you counting on the 50% that they did know or the 50% that they didn't know? And so you end up having to teach them that again. So what we wanted to do was to speed up that problem-based learning approach by providing a scaffolded problem-based learning design. So if we have a quick think about what learning design comprises, we need to think about the content that the students have to learn. So as we saw this morning with our teachers, the student teachers, they created various different LAM sequences, but each of them had different content that they put into that. So obviously thinking about that. Thinking also about the resources. So in this case, for this particular unit, the sorts of resources we had, textbook, we had lecturers, we had tutors, we had some face-to-face time with them, we had internet access. So a number of these sorts of things were resources available, which allowed us to deliver content in different ways. The key part of the focus on this redesign really was what were the tasks and activities going to be. If we're going to use problem-based learning as a way of teaching the material, how is that going to impact on the activities which they perform? And looking at what sort of support mechanisms needed to be in place, which is why looking at learning management system that we use, looking at the LAMP sequences to support them through this process. But of course, we have this little bit of a dilemma. We don't want to scaffold them too much, so this is always the issue with scaffolding. You know, how much do you give them? They are second year university students. In the following year, I want them to pretty much do it on their own, so I didn't want them to just blindly follow the things. I'm not sure whether you can... Can you read those at the back? So first of all, so we were going to use LAMP, so I'll just go through what this design is and then I'll explain why we didn't, and in the end we've used Moodle and a range of different things. So first of all, we've got a couple of optional sequences which has some material that is put up, some information, and then people can make some comments on it. So that's, you can see along the top here on it, this. So that's the chat and scribe. So if you're trying to look for a definition of what those things are. So the idea was every week I wanted to repeat this sequence. I wanted to take them through some steps so that there would be a balance between the theory they were getting, the application of that, and then reinforcement of the theory. So not so much just give them a problem and you work out what might be relevant, but really focusing them more on what theory might be relevant and then giving them the problems with that sort of just thrown into the back of their mind so that it might they might be more aware of what out of the range of theories might be relevant to solve that problem. So this was an optional one, so I envisaged that it wouldn't be used every week, but that sometimes there would be material put up which then they could post information about and chat to each other about. What was then going to happen, so what's not shown in this sequence is prior to, so there's a multiple choice quiz which you can do through LAMS, okay, so this is an assessment task and it can, the LAMS system can keep track of, you know, how many marks they got for it. So it is very much aligned with assessment as well. So with the multiple choice, that was what happened. The lecture was on Thursday night for 3 hours. And so that was from 6 till 9. At 8:45, the quiz came online. So that they were, the idea was you should read the material, the lecture material first of all. Okay, nice idea. I used to do it, but I might be the only person in the world that ever did it. Then you attend the lecture, and then sometime after the lecture, but by, I think it was 3:30 was the first tutorial on Monday, you needed to do the quiz. So the multiple choice quiz, we actually, well, I'll show you some examples of that later. So a whole range of different types of questions, not just multiple choice, true and false, close questions, these sorts of things. So they got half a mark, 0.5% a week to do that. Okay, this is the carrot to get them to do it. Sounds a bit sad, but anyway, they all agree. If you force them to, you give them half a mark for attending the tutorial, they prefer to have that. Even the good students who would go anyway are still happier to get half a mark. So if you're in primary school teaching and you were hoping that things were going to change, I'm sorry, they don't change. What's shown here in this dark, so here you can see the same thing, question and answer. This one's an online activity and this is an offline activity. So this actually, these two offline activities represent what was actually happening in the tutorial. So they would do, after the lecture, they would do the quiz, which was related to the readings that they had and attending the lecture. And many of them, I'm sure, sat there with the questions in the textbook next to them. And I didn't really mind. It did force them to read at least the textbook and the lecture notes before the tutorial. They actually didn't get the questions until the tutorial. Now, that's, I don't know if any of our other units do that at all, because the normal practice is you put up the questions beforehand, The ideal is, which does not work in general in computing, unless, again, you give them more carrots and more marks and they submit it online, and then it's very difficult for us to mark it beforehand anyway. So usually it would be you would get questions beforehand. You're supposed to have made a solution to it beforehand, which you bring along and you discuss in class. Of course, the better students say, well, I'm wasting my time coming along for the hour, you know, travelling in here, because if I actually answered the questions and got them right, you know, what are we doing here? And which is a valid point as well. So in this, because we had this focus on problem-based learning, you would come along with the theory, the concepts, the terms stuck in your head, but not necessarily knowing what you were going to do with them. And so in the we had a two-hour session, so we actually combined our prac. So we usually, most of our units have a practical session in the labs where you would do some tasks with some software in the labs, but we combined it, the pracs and the tutes together, so we had a two-hour session. So that was a little bit of a logistical issue, which turned out to be fine because this emergency change, you know, so last year, the end of the year, around this time, we saw, oh, you know, this has gone really badly. It wasn't probably till about March or April this year, because then you're teaching something else, where it was, well, we better do something about that, you know, second semester again. And of course, the timetable's well and truly in place by then. So we were lucky to be able to. We had actually scheduled pracs and tutes back to back, but in different locations, and because we control our labs. So we actually had the tutorials in our computer labs, and they had wide aisles with wheels on them. So I pointed out to the students, they have wheels on them for a purpose so that you can move around the room. So it worked out okay. The idea here was, after they had these questions and they chatted together, a lot of the work was done in groups, is that they would write it up. So this was really quite an issue for us, with not having handed out questions beforehand and then essentially handing out solutions in the tutes, which was more commonly the way it was. Whether you handed it out or went through it on the board, that's effectively what a tutorial was like in the past. Whereas when you come along with nothing, I mean, your textbook and maybe some notes or whatever, you then had nothing to take away either. So that at times did pose a bit of a problem, particularly if we got people working in groups, drawing different diagrams, and then you wanted another group to look at it, you'd have to have someone else draw it again, and you have to keep a copy yourself and pass it around. And yeah, it was a bit of an issue of what people could take away. Then we had originally planned that after that, so you'd get a half a mark, half a percent for doing this multiple choice question. And then you would get another half a mark, which, well, you had to attend the tutorial, obviously, to know what this was about, where you would write up something. And, of course, that was a little bit of a logistical problem in terms of marking it. And so we were planning to do just some random, you know, every so many weeks look at different ones to see whether they... Essentially, it was more for reflection. It was really more, you know, did they attend? Did anything go in? What came out? You know, what happened in the middle? That was the main goal of it. So it was only going to be fairly short, and then you would submit that solution. Okay, and that's 1 week, and each week it would go back. This notice board here was, it's not linked into the sequence because this was just additional stuff that wasn't necessarily done at any point in time, but each week at different times something would go up on the notice board. Now, I had one of my honour students, sort of, I went through this process with her, to, you know, a dry run of it. She didn't like this at all, this having to do this reflective bit afterwards. Okay, maybe I shouldn't listen to her because students don't always know the best thing for them, but she thought it'd be a real drag and she'd sort of resent that. And so given that it was a hurdle, who was going to mark it, you know, I also discussed it with the tutor. I was a bit sneaky. We had 7 tutorials, and I managed to orchestrate it so that I had the one person taking all of them. Well, I took one of them and she took the other 6. So usually you can't do that, but because it was a new thing, I spent a lot of time. Each week we went through what we were going to do, and then after the first one she would discuss with me how it turned out and we'd modify it. So it was very nice to be able to have that control. Anyway, this is what we were thinking of doing. By the time this was done was probably June or July. Okay, semester starts July, August. We had a few network issues. I wasn't quite sure if it was going to be available to them. But in my department, we had decided that we would trial Moodle, okay, as a separate thing from Blackboard, because, well, I hate Blackboard, but anyway. So the students were already going to have to cope with Moodle. I wanted them to use another system called Track. They were going to have to use another new system called Enterprise Architect. There were about four different software products that were new to them, and I didn't know that they would find this additional thing so helpful. And as you know, if you have with technology, one thing that doesn't work well, and I was using their keypads as well in the lectures, when something doesn't go well, the whole thing goes out the window. And some of the learning goals aren't achieved, even though, you know, really it shouldn't have been such an issue. So I'm sure you can't read that. I think it's a little bit more readable in the paper. Anyway, what I did, essentially that sequence, I've provided resources and done the quiz through Moodle. The way this is structured here, so this is just a general thing here. As it grew, I really should put some dividers in. So here we've got week one, here we've got week two, here we've got week three, week four. So there was some structure in that way. The way it... So here we've got introduction to software processor. So that was some material for them to read, that linked to the lecture material. Then this tutorial week one, that actually was the quiz. So they went into that and they did this quiz first of all. And certain weeks there'd be other, as you can see, different resources that were put up for them. So it's not quite the same thing, but we did provide a sequence through that. Yeah. So, as I've explained to you, we had a three-hour lecture. They also had textbook and additional readings. After that happened, immediately following that, was to do a quiz. So none of these things are all that readable. They're more readable here than... You can't read that, can you? You can? Oh, okay. So you can see here, this is a multiple choice question. This one, there's drop-down boxes next to all of those. You pick from the options. So Moodle has a lot of different quiz options there that you can set up, and it keeps track of the scoring for you. What happened in that offline activity, so this just gives you an example of what I called a run sheet. That's from my years of being an operator in the IT field, where I went through with the tutor beforehand. So this is the very first week where we spent... So I went through it with her. I'd write it up, we'd sit down and discuss it, then she'd actually run it and then send me an email or come and see me about what didn't. We'd make a modification to it, not trying to modify it too much because we didn't want to penalise, you know, the first group on Monday every week and they still had to cover the same amount of material. So pointing out to her, deciding with her how it's going to work. This one's going to be a group one. Sometimes it would just be with two people. Sometimes it would be the whole class together. Approximate how long each activity is going to take. I used a lot of... I read a paper, an Ascolite paper, last year, I think it was, and they had this notion of flashcards in there and some other things, you know, quizzes and... And that, you know, I hadn't thought about flashcards since I was teaching my daughter to read, you know. And I thought, oh, I can use that with my university students as well. So this doesn't really show it to you all that well, but each of these little bits and pieces were actually different laminated sheets, which in the particular room we had a really long whiteboard. We had several sections on it. So we had this covering it. So this is from the first week. Now, when I finished the end of the first week, we had covered... So I don't expect you to know any of these, and just to point out. So we had SWOT, ISA, BPR, VCM, COBIT, ITIL, CMM, ISO, JAD, RUP, and then all these things. And I, you know, after having taught that week, I'm like, oh, what's this, you know, where does this one fit in? And in the textbook, there's only two paragraphs on each thing. So I had no idea, thinking of writing the tutorial, there wasn't enough information for them to actually do anything with it, to really learn about it. But what we did with this was to actually visualise how they all fitted together. Oh, COBIT, ITIL, CMM, ISO, they're all business level process and product standards. So that's, even though I only know a little bit about them, a few points about each one, oh, they all fit into that category, so at least I can understand them in that way. So a lot of use of different aids, a lot of group work in the tutorials, but also assignment two was group work. So effectively, for many of these students, the first time they had done any group work, and so that was in the second assignment, so that was definitely worth some marks. Now, one of the issues, again, if you've done some problem-based learning that you'll discover, is that it can be very tricky for the tutors because, and even yourself as a teacher, you might have had, you know, when you try to turn it around so that the learner directs the learning, they very commonly will say to you, why don't you just teach?
Yeah.
You know, you're being paid to teach. I come here to hear you teach. You know, why do I have to learn, you know? And so similarly for what happens with the tutors is that they'll go along to a tut and they'll put some problems out there, which of course I give them, you know, at least one, if not multiple possible solutions. But in all of these things, they're modelling problems, there's many different possible solutions. And so the poor tutor has to go essentially and be set up as a target where there can be criticism back that you know, well, tell us what the answer is, you know, oh, you don't know the answer, do you? Or, of course, what's very difficult for them is that the students will come up with a solution and they've sort of got to critique that. That's pretty hard. So what you have to do is really turn it around so that everyone's critiquing it, you know, so collectively you actually come up with a better solution, but it is quite tricky. So you may have read through one of these. I'll read the top one. PBL is ideal for working in groups, and I think this can benefit the students as they are more likely to brainstorm and come up with ideas and thoughts before they reach a conclusion, possible solution. PBL and working in groups also takes the pressure off each individual to come up with the correct or only answer to a given problem question. So that's a plus and that's also a minus because you know that they just want to come along and they just want the answer. So a problem in this particular unit was that I was teaching half of it. The agreement was that the whole of the unit would be taught in that way. Of course, the second half then didn't, which was really the problem that we'd had last year to some extent anyway with that material, was that it then wasn't presented in the same way. And for me, it was very disappointing in that the feedback, we have liaison meetings once a month with our students, with representatives, that they weren't complaining that it had changed back to the old style. I wanted them to complain that, you know, oh, we had so much fun before and blah, 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 or we learnt so much more before. But the thing is, it was familiar ground for them to be given the questions beforehand and then go to the tutorial and get the answers, which is what it reverted back to. And so, to some extent, some of them felt more comfortable with that. We're still working on getting the student view. So, this reference here, we've handed this out to the students. I actually have the results, but I haven't entered them yet. So I can't tell you. It's not definitive anyway. This paper is measurement and analysis of student engagement in university classes where varying levels of PBL methods are in use. So we wanted to ascertain if they did, you know, feel more engaged, if they, you know, felt that they had learnt how to apply theories or concepts to practical problems in a new situation. So we will be looking into that, but of course they didn't have that experience throughout the whole of the unit. So issues again with problem-based learning is that it is more student-directed learning. You know, there is more of a responsibility on them. And part of the problem that then arises is that it's hard to do it in half a unit or even in one unit. It needs to be usually the decision of a whole department to sort of say, well, this is the way we're going to teach and effectively this is the way you're going to learn, whether you like it or not, because we know what's better for you. So, yeah, there is a learning curve in, you know, setting those resources up was definitely more work, although it's a bit of a switch in the way of doing things. And to some extent, setting up, posing a problem and then just a possible solution rather than trying to get it right can sometimes be easier. But the problem, I guess, is coming up with an authentic task whereas it's very easy to come up with, define this term, what does it mean? You know, which are typical sorts of questions you might get otherwise. Anyway, some questions.
I'm conscious, actually, that we're over time with Holly from lunch, so perhaps can I encourage people to grab Debbie individually if you have questions for her. Lunch is down the steps and just to your right, and otherwise pass you the thanking Debbie for a great talk.